The Science Show on RN. So what of the legacy of Bragg?
Crystals, as the basis of the scientific technique crystallography, can also be very useful if you want to find out the structure and shape of things. Easy, you might think, but what if the objects are too small to be seen or touched? What if you want to find out the shape of a protein or a virus? X-ray crystallography has allowed scientists to map the shape of many useful and important structures. Penicillin? DNA? Insulin?
That's a video about how they do X-ray crystallography now in 2014. Why should you care? Well, the video's great fun, so do watch. And if you want to combat plagues like Ebola, this is how it's done. What I didn't know is how hard it is to get a crystal of the germ or protein you're trying to examine. This is Elspeth Garman in Oxford, where she's Professor of Molecular Biophysics.
There are some rather magical and mysterious steps in the protein crystallography pipeline. One of these is the growing of the crystals, which is still very hit and miss. So we have to try thousands of conditions sometimes to get one crystal. The crystal we finally grew after 7,000 conditions were tried was a 50th of a millimetre in size, and we only ever grew one.
The thing that really amazes me is that sometimes this process takes years.
That's right. This particular project, which was a tuberculosis enzyme involved in making the waxy coat that tuberculosis grows when it's latent around it to protect it from the body's attack, that was an 18-year project. So the principal investigator, Edith Sim, who's now at Kingston University, she'd been trying for 15 years to get enough protein to actually try and grow a crystal, because you need quite a volume of it, and we couldn't get enough protein. And then a new graduate student arrived from Jordan, now Dr. Arij Abu Hamid, and she was the most determined student I've ever worked with. And after 2 years, she managed to produce enough protein of this tuberculosis enzyme to try crystallization. We tried for a year to get crystals, and we couldn't get any, and it was incredibly frustrating. And then we tried a new technique. Well, it's not new, but people don't try it very often, which is called cross seeding, where you take a crystal of something else, you mash it up into tiny, tiny nanocrystals, so really tiny shards, dilute it by 1,000, and then put a few of these little shards in the protein that you want to crystallize. And then you hope that that acts as a nucleus for the crystal to grow. And we had a trial of a robot that helps to do this, and we got one crystal of a 50th of a millimetre.
I would have thought, and this is probably very cheeky of me, that in 100 years, and of course this is the International Year of Crystallography, but 100 years since the Braggs, you'd just whip up a crystal before morning tea, shove it in the device, get a few shadows out by the afternoon, and you'd have a structure before you went home.
Well, I wouldn't have a job if it was that easy, Robin. So what you have to realise, that the distance the field has come in 100 years. So the Braggs solved the structure of sodium chloride. That has two distinct atoms in it, sodium and chlorine. The ribosome, for which the Nobel Prize was awarded in 2009 to Venki Ramakrishnan and Tom Stites and Ada Yonath, has 593,596 non-hydrogen atoms in it. So that's not even counting the hydrogens, of which there are thousands. And this huge molecular machine is what's responsible for turning our RNA and manufacturing the proteins that we need to digest our food and move our muscles and so on. So in 100 years, actually, the field has come an enormous distance. The beams are very, very much more intense. So we have third generation synchrotron sources, which give us many, many photons. They're much smaller beams. They're tunable, so we can choose the wavelength in order to get the information we need. And the software with which we can analyse our spotty patterns is also incredibly sophisticated now, using very good techniques of mathematics. And the other huge revolution since the Braggs, and even in the last 30 years, has been molecular biology. So if you wanted to study, say, a protein in spinach, you used to have a ton of spinach delivered to the lab floor, get your pestle and mortar, and separate out just the protein from the spinach that you wanted to study. Now, what you do is you take E. coli and you splice the gene of E. coli and you con it into growing up the protein that you want. And that protein might be from tuberculosis or from Ebola, or it might be from any other organism, human proteins. And E. coli will actually act as a little factory for you to produce the protein that you want in the quantities that you need for crystallography.
Isn't that convenient? But you've still got, as you say, these gigantic molecules somehow to work out. And one thing that I really loved about your video, which, by the way, you can see on the Science Show website, there's a link there. You've got these little green people and they're all stacked in the kind of order that nature would require. And they've got little eyes, but when they get the beam shot at them, one of them has its eye removed as if there's damage done when you do the process. How much does that distort things?
Well, it can distort them rather a lot, and in fact my group has been focusing on this for the last 15 years, the radiation damage that's suffered by the crystal while you're measuring the structure. In order to improve our chances of getting enough data, we actually cryocool the crystals down to minus 173 centigrade. We have to put some antifreeze in, otherwise the water in between the molecules will freeze as ice, which has a bigger volume than liquid water, and therefore it pushes the little green men further apart and makes them disordered, so they're not lined up like soldiers on a parade ground anymore. But it turns out that if you do this cryocooling procedure in a logical way and are using a bit of physics and experience, of course, you can get between 10 and 120 times more data from a cryocooled crystal than you can at room temperature. So this is what the technique that 95% of the structures are solved using this technique. Now you might say, but you're looking at human proteins, important for human health, you're looking at viruses, you're looking at bacteria, and they don't go around at minus 173 centigrade. What on earth are you doing? You're finding these three-dimensional structures at 100 Kelvin. This is not relevant. But in fact, what's been shown is that these structures, they may have tiny details that are different at room temperature because you've got water molecules that move and so on, but that the predictive power of structures determined at minus 173 centigrade is actually excellent. So as a way to get an idea about what the molecule looks like and to start designing inhibitors, if that's what you're trying to do, or finding the mechanism, it's still very, very relevant.
Well, plenty of progress, but still some obstacles. Well, the first time I talked to you, I seem to remember, was this right? You were talking about Utsi, you know, the man up the mountain, who is one of the oldest fossils found in Europe, and you were analysing aspects of his tissues. Have you had much to do with him since?
I haven't. That was 18 years ago, terrifyingly. But the technique that was used to analyse his hair and the hairs from his coat, his deerskin coat, which actually found that there was copper on the outside of his hair and not on his coat, so there was the postulate, unproven and unprovable, of course, that he'd actually smelted his own copper axe that he was carrying when he was found. That technique, which is called proton-induced X-ray emission, PIXI for short, nothing to do with fairies, that we are now using to analyse proteins to find out what metal is bound in them. Many proteins in our body carry a metal atom or more than one metal for their function. They need this. Sometimes the metal is causing the protein to actually hold together, so it's a structural thing rather than for its function. And we can take a tiny, tiny volume of liquid protein and put it in a proton beam, and we can see the X-ray emission induced by that interaction of the proton with the atom. These X-rays have a different energy for every element in the periodic table. So you can immediately identify, ooh, I've got zinc.
So things have moved on wonderfully. How are you celebrating the International Year yourself?
I've done a variety of things and it's actually been fascinating. I've done a pint of science in a pub in Oxford, and that was great. I made touch with some local school teachers and I'll be going to their school.
A pint of science is like science in the pub we have in Australia.
That's right, yes. I have some lovely beer mats with pint of science on. That was great. And the frustration, I think, was the barman who had to pull pints and he really wanted to listen. I was talking about bird flu there and work that I did with the late Graham Laver.
From Australia.
Yes.
A mention of Graham Laver there at the end, another pioneer in the field from Australia. Elspeth actually started as a nuclear physicist, and now she's cracking molecules. And that's how you tackle Ebola and TB and other killer problems. The legacy of the Braggs of Adelaide. And do watch the video, links on the Science Show website. It's terrific.